KBOO Portland.
And welcome to Trippy Politics Protests and
Potpourri.
I'm your host, Corey Elia, and as always, my co-host,
Leslie McLam. Well, we're here today at Revolution Hall, speaking with Suzette Smith. Thank you for speaking with us and coming to talk on our podcast.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
So you are one of the frontline reporters that's been covering these protests. You're independent or freelance journalist?
I am a freelance journalist. I used to be the arts editor of the Portland Mercury, but then when coronavirus pandemic happened and they laid everybody off, they laid me off too. And now the Portland Mercury only has two full-time reporters and the editor-in-chief, so they're a pretty small team, but I still write for them regularly.
So yeah, I've been down here reporting since day one. I believe you've been pretty much out here almost since the same time. When did you start coming down? How many days do you think you've been out?
And what made you want to come out to cover the protests?
So for the first week of the protests, I thought I had coronavirus. I had like a pretty bad flu, but then I realized that it wasn't coronavirus and I got a coronavirus test. In that time, it's also like I live downtown, so I was hearing the protests all the time. So it was a bit of a confluence between the Portland Mercury's team of two journalists and the editor-in-chief, who all were kicking ass during that time, just realizing that they were getting tired. And so they asked me to start freelancing for them, covering protests. And then at the same time, even on nights when I wasn't freelancing for them, I would hear the flashbangs that the police were employing. And I would think, like, this sounds terrible. Like, one night I was smoking in front of my apartment and the police came screaming down my street, screaming at everybody to go indoors, which, like, I'm a person without a ton of, I have a lot of anxiety and not a lot of fear. So that was fine for me, but like it terrified my neighbor. So I just like was talking to him and he was freaked out. And I was like, well, this is something that is in my imagination. So I'd better go see it so that I know what it is. And so like, I think seeing it and knowing what it is one of the things that continues to have me covering the protests. Also as a arts and culture writer, I'm just obsessed with human idiosyncratic behavior. And the protest is rife with that.
So I myself was trained as a news and arts and culture journalist for a couple of years. I was doing that beat, and then I kind of just stepped out on my own and started doing more abstract stuff. Now managing editor for Village Portland, I kind of find it interesting to the amount of artwork that is coming out of this. What's some of the most amazing stuff you've seen?
So downtown is like when they started boarding it up, which was so interesting. There was like a weekend when everything was boarded up, and then immediately people started doing murals. So all the different murals have been pretty astounding. I know, I can't remember the name of the artist, but Flat Rabbit Studio has been doing some really beautiful work. And then of course, the Nightmare Elk, which is like, there was an elk that was standing, what is that, on Main between, 3rd and 4th, and all the protesters used to hang out on top of it. And then at some point the city removed it, the Regional Arts and Culture board removed it and put it in like a secret safe location. And then an artist made, like, welded a metal, super creepy, very frightening elk that has been nicknamed the Nightmare Elk. Actually looks more like an elk than the original elk did, because the original elk was made by a sculptor who didn't know what elks looked like. It's basically a deer with bigger horns, which is just, you know, all the fascinating stuff. There's so much interesting art. Like, I think the chants are often a form of art. Like, I have the demands, like, are always in my head every day, like, and where should the money go to, black communities? Like, that song is in my head all the time. So I think there's, like, so many different things about the protests that are artful, from, like, the shields that have art on them to the chants, to the singing. Just, it's all pretty interesting.
So what would you say on the culture of the protests since you've been covering them? How do you think it's changed, grown?
Interesting things about the protest, just with the people. The people who are doing it regularly are, like, adapting to what the Portland police and the Multnomah County sheriffs and also the federal officers who were involved for a while, they're just, like, adapting to it in a strange way where, you know, they use gas, so people use paint respirators, and they they charge with bulrushes so people bring out shields. And now with this new threat of alt-right white supremacist characters coming into town and, like, threatening people, you're seeing a lot of mutual aid-funded, like, bulletproof vests, which is so interesting. It's just, like, it's interesting how the whole operation feels very reactionary and defensive. I think people have said to me before the idea of, like, why don't these people do something smarter, you know? And I do think that the whole, this whole movement is a reaction to, like, what happened to George Floyd. And it's an emotional reaction. And we want, like, our culture teaches us that emotional responses are, like, bad and that you should always be logical. But I do think that there's something extremely compelling about the way people feel so strongly that it continues to bring them out and it continues to make them resist. Like, over and over, I think to myself, you can't expect a crowd of people protesting police brutality to back down in the face of police brutality. And so there's this very weird heroic tale of this group of people that perpetually shows up and doesn't allow themselves to be crushed by oppression.
So you mentioned the bulletproof vests are the new defensive safety caution. Were you ever thinking that you would have to worry about munitions? Has that been on your mind very often while being out there?
I'm a very cross that bridge when you come to it sort of person. I haven't actually been hit by very many munitions, but I also am some journalists run to the front, some journalists hang back, and I'm more of like dicing it out in the middle kind of person. And so I really, like, the first time I was hit by something was at the alt-right white supremacist rally that happened last Saturday, where I got hit in the head with a full bottle of Fruit Punch Gatorade, which just seemed like a waste. But you know, and at the same time, it glanced off my helmet, and I was like, well, that's a very big bottle of liquid, so I don't see really how water bottles could be starting riots. But in any event, like, I am not, I don't know, I sometimes wonder, I'm surrounded by journalists who are increasingly getting bulletproof vests, and I wonder if I'm just like a puppy that sees all the other puppies wearing vests and is like, maybe I should do that. Like, I guess I find myself thinking of, like, what would that do if someone shot me? I guess it would protect my vital organs, but I'm also a person without health insurance because I'm unemployed, so, and I, like, tried to get Oregon healthcare plan, but they denied me. And so it's like, it would be sort of financially, my life would be over. Like, it would be ruinous. Like, maybe it would, no, that's too dark of a joke. like, I would just, you know, the future of facing down medical bills.
Has it changed your perception of your safety from the beginning of going out and wanting to see what the flashbangs were about versus, you know, here we are this week after a few of the pro-Trump and alt-right rallies that are now occurring in response to the nightly and daily Black Lives Matter and anti-police protests that are happening in Portland? Like, how has your perspective of safety evolved?
Okay, so I'm a person that likes to walk around at night. It's one of the main reasons I like to live in Portland. I grew up in Detroit, so you can't really walk around at night there, even if you're brave. Just there's too much weird stuff happening. But a lot of what makes Detroit dangerous is that there aren't people on the streets. So any person you do run into might be kind of up to something. So in Portland, it's great that people do walk around, and it always made me feel fairly safe when I would, like, walk around pretty late at night. And then when coronavirus hit, there was no one downtown, except for people who were just having a really hard time and living on the streets. And so it was like they had always been there, but then the mix of people downtown, there were no more people who weren't having a hard time. So it just became, and I'm not threatened by homeless people at all. In fact, I feel like if something bad happened to me and a homeless person was in a tent next to me, they would probably help me out, maybe even more than other people, just because they themselves find themselves in vulnerable situations. But it was interesting how the protests sort of gave downtown back to me, because I started going to the Justice Center to cover, and I would find myself outside, like, looking up at the stars on, like, a nice summer night in between gassings and thinking, like, oh, the gas is cleared and I can see the stars. It's so nice down here. I do feel like the protests have actually made downtown feel safer to me. Like, when it comes to people saying, oh, the stores, most of the stores wouldn't have been open anyways because of the pandemic. And I'm not super sure how many of those stores could even be open right now because they were only in phase one. So I think that protesters, I think they're fine. They don't threaten me in a way that is, like, intimidating. The only people I ever am afraid of is just, like, what the what various police officials will do.
I've been wanting to, like, try and bridge onto the situation downtown pertaining to the houseless, the homeless, especially the ones that happen to have used to live right near the Justice Center. Most of them have completely vacated out. Continual tear gassing, stuff like that. You're downtown, you see it more than I have a chance to. I was wondering if maybe you can, like, share some insight into what's going on there.
Yeah, like, how do you see what is going on with the police response to the protesters and, you know, everything that's happening at night with the people that are out at night? How is that affecting the houseless community that you see in downtown since you're a resident of the area?
When Riot Ribs was more of an institution in the parks, it seemed like a very good thing for houseless people. Like, I have a clear memory of, like, walking down one of those sidewalks in Lowensdale Park and some guy being like, I've had a meal every day this week, just talking to his buddies with a sense of awe that he was, that someone was sort of taking care of him. And unfortunately, the Riot Ribs thing fell apart. And so it was an interesting thing because people were sleeping in the park and some of those people were homeless to begin with, and they were able to, like, sort of create a sense of community there. And I'm definitely sad to see that no longer be present. Homeless people are so versatile that those people are just somewhere else now, which is sort of the thing of why I've never really felt like I needed people that were houseless to leave downtown, because I know they're close to services there. And they're still getting services, although, like, certainly there's different restrictions. They're, you know, getting carry out instead of being able to eat in the hall now, that kind of stuff. Yeah, I don't know if I'm, like, a person who can really speak to it. It feels in a lot of ways the same as it was before.
Since you do live downtown, it's just such an interesting perspective. Earlier you had mentioned that when you first went out, some of your neighbors needed talking to and you were comforting them. What sort of things are they saying now that this has been going on for 3 months or more?
Huh. Boy, me and my neighbors don't talk about the protests. We talk about whether or not they're going to raise our rent, and we talk about if I've seen their packages. Like, yeah, I don't know that the people who live downtown care that much about it, but I also know that the protests right now are happening more in the neighborhoods. And in the neighborhoods, you'll hear people, like we were walking down a street last night and there was just a guy with his hand raised on his porch, which was kind of charming to me. With, like, a fist.
I've seen that a lot.
And then, like, you know, or, like, when we were in Kenton, like, a week or so back, and that lady was like, these kids aren't doing anything. If you would just go home, they would go home. Which, you know, is potentially not true, but the spirit was true. Like, I don't know if the protesters would go home if the police went home, but I do think that the protesters, their actions don't necessarily warrant the level of violent response that they receive. So it's been interesting, and I do also know that people are like, I'm tired of this. I feel like most of the time when I'm walking through the neighborhoods, I'm met with curiosity. But yeah, downtown I haven't really, most of the time, like, it's mixed, and then when you talk to people, you know, yeah, I can't say that everybody's on the protester side. I can't say that people hate it. For the most part, I feel like it doesn't actually impact the lives of the people who are downtown. Like, most of the time we're just talking about who's got a good price for cigarettes.
So, when you're in this middle area, not quite at the front lines or, you know, a block away, getting the context of the scene, are you taking more photographs? Are you doing video? What sort of content are you gathering?
I generally do video. I think of myself as a writer, but then the people who seem to be following it, I was on Twitter before, and then I just started posting videos to Twitter, and then you can say a lot with, like, a 15-second video, depending on what is happening. So I do usually take video. Sometimes I take photos. I'm more likely to take photos just because I've had people talk to me about how they'd like to throw me, like, money to use my photos for, like, news stories. So that one is definitely related to people just asking me to do it, to take photos. But then video is something that I use not only to document what's happening, but also as a method of note-taking for me. I've definitely written pieces where I've gone back and looked at the timestamps of when my videos were to make sure, like, what was happening. Like, the protest that happened last Saturday was so quick. It happened in 2 hours. And so, like, I really needed to be, like, this happened at this time, this happened at this time, and it all happened in the space of, like, by 2:30 it was done. It was strange.
So, how would you compare these protests to previous protests here in Portland? I myself have covered a lot, going all the way back to August 29th, 2017, I believe it was, and something like that. It was nutty. In the past, these clashes between the alt-right groups and the what everybody wants to try and label as Antifa, but we all kind of know is one giant group of, like, different organizations. How would you describe these protests to the other ones?
When it comes to protests in general, I covered protests for the Mercury for, like, years. And, you know, I was in the crowd when that guy pulled a gun out at the Don't Shoot Portland protest in 2016. And that was really interesting to compare to when the guy pulled a gun out last Saturday. I would say that, one, it told me that this new group of protesters, who definitely include people who were at that protest in 2016, like, it's all a thread that continues. Like, people who were in the Occupy Portland movement are part of this protest, and they've, like, learned things, and it's made them more prepared. You know, and I was in the Women's March, which was like a piece of cake, except that there were too many people and you couldn't move. I know that we're all jaded now because it's been longer than 3 months of being pretty shocked initially at the police response to the protesters whose actions didn't warrant the violent response it received. And then continuing to see that and just not seeing any sort of change, not seeing any sort of attempt to modify the response. That's just continually illuminating in a way that makes me feel guilty because people of color have told me that for decades. And now, I mean, I knew it, but now I know it in a deeper way.
This is kind of a more abstract question, and it has to do with journalistic style. When it comes to my reporting, I tend to try and throw in a little bit of humor if I can every once in a while. Sometimes it hits, sometimes it doesn't. Like, we also got Robert Evans out there who's very gonzo. What style do you think you're more dealing with when you're reporting?
I think that I am funny. I wouldn't want to put something out there that I would find boring to read, which is a style of writing I learned at the Portland Mercury that I hope to carry forward. I feel relentlessly wedded to the facts and trying not to put too much of my opinion in there, if nothing else, because that's a little redundant. I do think that readers like to know about the opinions of the person writing the piece, and that goes for, like, tweets, and that goes for podcasts, but I've often found that my work has been stronger when I write it and then I take myself out of it, and so in general you'll find me trying to do that approach in my work. I do think I have, like, kind of a dry humor that is very wry, and often things are funny just because they are funny. Like, I think I was running down a street after some federal officers and somebody was right behind me playing Yakety Sax, and I did not intend that video to be that way, but it just was that way. I don't know that I would have even chosen to play Yakety Sax then, because I don't know if I think it's silly, but, like, a lot of people are like, this music goes really well here, and I'm like, well, if you all think that's funny, that's great.
That's fantastic. I know what you mean about sometimes you can't always pick what goes into the content. You're grabbing it and someone's playing music and that somehow becomes the theme music. I've grabbed a few videos where protest sound has been playing the Stormtrooper Imperial March. I've seen a lot of videos where that's coming up. The last thing I wanted to ask you, and thank you for the bit of humor there. The last thing I wanted to ask you was, where can people go to find your work, to follow you on social media, and to look into some of the work that you've already put out there?
Sure. I have a fairly common name, which is Suzette Smith. So my URL for my writer website is Suzette Smith Smith, because that seemed easier to remember, SuzetteSmithSmith.com. And then generally I'm most active on Twitter, which is literally, again, Suzette Smith. I got in there pretty early and got my name. I think that those two things are generally linking to the work that I do. I used to make comics, and sometimes I wonder if I'll make comics about this, but covering the protests has been so time-consuming, and comics in themselves are a time-consuming art form, that I haven't really done anything with that. There's a lot of things that could come out of covering the protests, but it feels like hard to work on them until the protests have concluded to some extent. Although I do admire the fact that you guys are doing a podcast right now. I can't even
just stay safe out there.
Thank you for speaking with us.
KBOO Portland.